Hello, music and movie fans. This is Sachin, your host on Sachin on Cinema and Sound, and I'm joined here today by my co-host.
Hi guys, my name's Kylie, and I'm Sutton's sister.
And today we're doing an album review. This is the fourth and final album by The Brobecks, Violent Things. So The Brobecks were an indie/alt-rock band from the 2000s. They formed in 2003 they formed in Salt Lake City, Utah, by a few people who knew each other through high school. Although I believe a few years after they graduated, and they never really made it big. They became fairly successful locally, and they did do some shows around America. They did perform prominently as an opening act for bigger, more well-known bands. Probably the most well-known of these was for Fall Out Boy, whom they opened a show for once. One thing about the Brobecks, though, is that unlike bands like the Beatles, where, you know, the four main members are Paul, John, and George and Ringo, the Brobecks, their lineup is kind of more complicated because the lineup kind of changed more frequently. Like when a key member left after their second album, and then two more key members, including the main singer and songwriter, left after the third album. And the reason why the Brobecks kind of broke up, first off, it happened more kind of slowly like this over time, where the main members just kind of were swapped out for newer musicians. They just wanted to pursue different passions. The Brobecks never really got that big, so they didn't feel like they were leaving behind this big commitment or anything. It was more just this big hobby for them. And this leads us to their fourth and final album, Violent Things. At this point, only one of the original members was left, and that was Galen Weeks. So he actually sings and writes all the songs, all 13 songs on this album. And despite being the only original member, this is definitely the Brobecks' most well-known work. So, what did you think of the album, or how do you describe the music on it?
Well, I've never heard of the Brobecks before you brought it up to me, but I thought that the album was really interesting and it had a diverse array of different songs. Like, some songs were more upbeat and happy, and others were more kind of dark and dreary with louder music, but I feel like most of them kind of revolve around girls and love, but some of them were more in indirect ways with a lot of metaphors. So there's just a lot of different elements to each song.
I agree. I think Galen is a very talented songwriter, especially in writing such diverse songs. It's really an accomplishment that this is the album that only features one songwriter, and it's still incredibly diverse. It feels like there really could have been a whole band of songwriters behind this. In fact, this was sort of Galen Weeks, his attempt to kind of reinvent the Brobecks from to more of like a project that was spearheaded by him as opposed to a band. And he only credits two other people, Drew Davidson as the drummer and then Casey Crescendo as the guitarist, pianist, and producer. This really could be almost thought of as a Galen Weeks solo album though. If he wanted to, he really could have advertised it as such. He even went as far as to promote it as being this first studio album by the Brobecks, which is kind of a bending of the truth because this was really the fourth album, but I think his reasoning was the first three albums were actually made in his garage. And this album was kind of a step above that because it was actually recorded in the producer's basement. Although it is described as a basement studio, so I think by that definition he was still able to say, oh, it's a studio album, because it was recorded in a studio. Yeah, but I think it really goes to show how he really wanted this to be like this big new start for him, and this big new start for what the Brobecks were. But it's sort of it's interesting how it ended up really being the end of the Brobecks, and for kind of an era in his life and songwriting career. Again, though, he brought up about how diverse the songs were. I think that's really evident with just the first two songs. Like, the first one is Goodnight Socialite, and I think it's a really brilliant opener, not because it's necessarily representative of what the average song from the album sounds like, but rather because it's just so brooding with intense atmosphere. It starts off with these very nice and delicate pianos, not piano, but just these strings, and you think, oh, how like beautiful orchestral, and then suddenly just pounds the speakers with this cacophony of intense sounds, like just something like this sense that something ominously terrible has happened. And it's a song about a murder that took place inside of like by like the murder of an aristocrat, and like the protagonist just after their inheritance. And then the second one is like very different. It has these very basic, what sound like very basic chord structures. It's called Better Than Me. And this is actually, in terms of the number of plays on Spotify, this is their most played song with about, I believe, 36 million plays. And it's basically about how the narrator kind of feels like he's kind of paranoid. He feels like everyone else is always better than him. And I feel like that's something I really enjoy about Gallen Weeks' songwriting. It kind of takes a lot of emotions that a very common emotions that you deal with, like affection for girlfriends, and then also this feeling that you're not good enough for yourself or for others, and he really amplifies them he amplifies them extensively and just kind of screams them out. It's really interesting too how he takes a lot of inspiration from different genres, like how at the end of one of my favorite songs, I Will Tonight, it kind of goes for a more tropical vibe. And then also the bridge in Visitation of the Ghost has sort of like a gospel section with the lyrics, "Oh my Lord, Lord, Lord," repeating by what sounds like a gospel choir. Was there anything else that surprised you about this album?
I think that the order that he put the songs in was very interesting. It wasn't kind of like a gradual change between, you know, the beginning to the end of the album. I feel like sometimes the songs that were next to each other were very different. Like Better Than Me, he talks about how, you know, he says I hate you about this girl, and then the next song is called Love at First Sight, and he says I'm in love. So I just thought that was really interesting that those two songs were put next to each other, and there must have been a reason why he decided to kind of put these songs in places where you wouldn't think that they would be.
I agree. I think there was still, because this is a very diverse track listing of songs, stylistically and lyrically, but I feel like there was definitely some thought that went into the structuring. Like, I think, for example, I already brought up how Goodnight Socialite could have only been the opener. I think also Better Than Me, it starts with a very catchy and kind of simple guitar riff that I feel like gets stuck in your head really easily. So that's why it was kind of appropriate as like an opening number song. But I feel like he really paid attention to not put songs that were too similar next to each other. It makes the album, I feel like, kind of fast-paced because you have such a contrast and array of ideas that are being presented to you. And it really helps that to make prevent things from feeling too repetitive or boring. I feel like something that I noticed was how Bike Ride and The Nerve, which are probably the most intense songs on here, were replaced as the third last and the second to last songs, probably to give the album like some really, some like, j- just like a big increase in energy at the end, especially before the grand finale, which is boring. And I mean, that's the name of the song. It's not actually boring. Did you have any favorite songs on here?
My favorite song is probably the sixth song on the album, which is called If You Like It or Not. And it's a more fast-paced song about how he met his future wife and how much, you know, he loved her so much and how kind of in love and head over shoulders above the other girls that she was, and how he danced on the graves of the other girls because of how much more he liked her more than everyone else. So I really like that song.
I agree. I think that's a really great song. It features probably some of his most interesting lyrics, like how he starts singing, "It makes me want to dance," and then the next lines go, "On the graves of all the girls that came before you." And then I have to say that probably my favorite song would go to "I Will Tonight." It's incredibly catchy. I just love how it incorporates all these different styles. It sounds grand. It sounds... I like how it like goes for a tropical ending. It really reminds me of what a lot of the songs from the 2000s sounded like, and it can't help but really feel nostalgic for it and for really the energy that comes with it. I'd have to say that a couple of my favorite other ones would be "Bike Ride," which is him screaming about how he is... he's in hell, and he's got to kill somebody now. It's sort of what a lot of his lyrics are like, where he feels like the world just pitted up against him, and he just amplifies what it is he's feeling about. He also, I think another one of my favorites is "La Vida Por Dio," which is also about a bike ride, but this is more of in a romantic context about vampires in turn-of-the-century France. It's just probably one of the most beautiful love songs I've heard. I think probably my favorite love song from this, though, is definitely "Love at First Sight." He said this in the liner notes, that this was written when he met his wife for the first time. And it really feels very autobiographical about how I imagine the different things that he said were like, and how they developed their relationship from there. It's an incredibly touching song. One I also can't help but give mention to is the final song, "Boring." First, most songs on this album are about 3 to 4 minutes long, but "Boring" is nearly 7 minutes long, which you may have not realized when you first listened to it, because yeah. Spotify doesn't show. When you have Spotify play in full screen, it doesn't show the length of the songs, but this really was the grand finale. As the name suggests, it starts off intentionally kind of boring, with Gallen just singing how everything is boring. These are kind of simple piano chords, but then as it develops, all these instruments start to swell with his voice. And then finally, when the lyrics end, you have this really long and a very beautiful instrumental it's kind of a big contrast to how "Goodnight Socialite" started. It's not really a cacophony, but it's just this beautiful landscape of sounds that it definitely sounds like the most complex arrangement of from all the songs from the entire album. And it really provides a very satisfying conclusion to the whole track listing. And something else that I didn't even find out until after hearing this album, at least the first time, but it really adds to just how incredible the work done on this was. So this album was recorded in the basement within 1 to 2 weeks. Not only that, but also because of time and money constraints, he never really got to finish it. The album never really received a proper sound mixing. And it's not something that you would even notice if it wasn't something you were already aware of, but it just means that he wasn't able to really reach the vision that he had wanted.
Something that I found out recently was that the song Visitation of the Ghost was actually re-recorded in 2011, 2 years after the original album came out, because he wasn't satisfied with the original recording and the acoustics in the original version.
Yeah, I think that that is an example of how, even though he was proud of the album, he was still, he kind of regretted that he was never, that he was unable to finish it at the time when he needed to. And that was sort of how he continued to use the Brobrex name after this album. He never really released a full project like this, but the Brobrex was still a name that he released music under as solo work, like certain songs, up until 2013. Shortly after this album was released, he had to come to terms with himself that the Brobrex wasn't something that was really financially supporting him when he was at a time when he was trying to start a family with his wife. So he actually considered quitting music, but then he got a call back for this band that he auditioned for called Panic at the Disco, which of course I'm sure everyone has heard of because they recently fired their bassist at the time. So he actually became a member of Panic at the Disco for several years, and that was interesting because that meant that he could continue performing music and he was financially supported. He also probably performed his biggest shows that he has ever done while with that band, but it meant that he could no longer really continue songwriting and didn't have really control over the type of music that he was making. So during that time, he was still releasing some solo work and songs under the Brobrex, and he finally had the final Brobrex shows in 2013, which is basically just him and then some session musicians who he hired. And then that was the end of the Brobrex. And then finally, he left Panic in 2017 to create his own band with one other person who was actually a former drummer for the Brobrex called I Don't Know How But They Found Me. And that's been a really great compromise because they're definitely popular enough now where they're like financially supported and they can keep doing this, but he also has like complete control over the type of music that he makes and how he makes it. For example, his band now has performed on the Jimmy Kimmel Show and also on the Ellen Show. So yeah, they are for sure, they've been really successful so far, and I'm really excited to see what they'll do next. And even though they are kind of a different blood from what the Brobrex were, I feel like this album really is the culmination of what the Brobrex could have been. I feel like this is how they peak. This is everything that I feel made them great with their diversity and how they were really able to accomplish great things even with such limited resources. I mean, it was recorded in a basement. It's just really incredible work. And I know that indie/alt is kind of a genre that can scare a lot of people off because they think, oh, it's just a band that they never made it big, they were never successful. But I think this really proves how it's just more than the talent. It really is a lot of luck that's involved in the industry, because this is honestly one of my favorite albums of all time. It's just such a really impressive array of ideas and really consistent quality throughout every song, and really great attention to detail at the arrangements as well. And it's something that, to this day, I'm still surprised that isn't as well known as I feel that it should be.
It's really exceeded my expectations, and I just feel like all the acoustics and the lyrics were really well done, and I recommend that everyone goes and listens to it.
Yep, buy it for your grandma. I'm sure she will love it. Well, thank you very much for joining me, and I'm really glad that you were able to enjoy this album, as I have, and you've really been able to find what makes it so special. This is Such a Non-Cinema and Sound, and see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.